God. It's full of stars.
It's Solan Hand! Woo! Brought to you by Good Game St. James.
Now in Cannington.
Are you keen to start a machine cult, but the BBC's banned you from telly? Are you into Stella, but she just won't return your calls? Or are you an amorphous emerald blob set on treating the solar system like a student party toilet? Well, Dreadnought listener, we may be your best port of call. We have Vipers, Corvettes, and even Matt's 1976 180B. If we want to go there, this is Seven Land Hand. Star Realms is a game. It's a card game designed by mathematical madmen and MTG Hall of Famers Darwin Castle and Robert Doherty. This intergalactic deck-building game found life when it was kickstarted into existence in November of 2013. By 2014, it had been nominated for everything Golden Geek, and it even managed to win a few awards. The game's elevator pitch reads, Star Realms is a spaceship combat deck-building game. The game offers all the thrills of traditional trading card game-style combat, combined with the fun of a deck-building game. Play powerful ships, destroy enemy bases, or blast your opponent directly on your way to victory. One disclaimer before we proceed, Doherty and Castle may not actually be madmen, however we believe they'd make a great TV crime drama duo. But what does it all mean to gamers? With me, in a rather special pod today, it's birthday boy Matt McHale.
Hi.
How old are you, Matt?
23.
17.
18.
18.
They're
all kids
again.
On this pod. And jumping out of the cake, it's, oh my God, it's Riley Evarts.
Hello.
That's Riley.
That's me.
And in the corner over there, chatting up Matt's drunken sister, it's Justin Edwards.
Denise is a fine piece. Just doing her.
We'll be breaking up that fight later on. How are we, gentlemen? What have you been up to?
Oh, birthday shit.
Birthday
and
shit.
And Easter shit.
And Easter shit. Huh?
Yeah, all at the same time.
Did you get any gaming business for your birthday?
Did I get into any gaming business?
Or did you receive any?
No,
any of the above?
The only gaming business I get is the stuff I get for myself, but I got into some gaming business. I managed to get my family into a game of Love Letter.
Oh dear. That's a good game.
It's a brilliant fucking game, and I'm glad I managed to get them into it because...
That's a tough gig, isn't it, getting the family in sometimes?
Yeah, they're not much of a gamer group, but I succeeded, and they enjoyed it, and... I guess the winner is me because they all know to get me board games and shit for birthday.
I think they already knew that, man.
No, I do all my own shopping.
Yeah. Actually.
And his own stunts.
And my own stunts.
Coincidentally, yeah. I've been getting Travis through quite a few games of Star Realms. Just as by coincidence.
Oh, that's. Yeah, it works out well.
I've even won a few. Hey, Justin, what's been happening?
I just came off 4 months of employment. So unemployment.
Came off four months of unemployment.
Man, my gaming stuff's just been off the chain.
So this means you have to wake up before 11 o'clock in the morning now.
Yeah, like half noon. What's going to happen? Go to bed at 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
But I picked up Bloodborne for the PS4. I know it's not a board game, but super hard, super cool. Playing Star Realms because of this amazing group we got. And a bit of Magic. Check out the new Dragon stuff. It's been cool.
Yeah, I've certainly been hitting a bit of Dragon stuff.
We pack ward.
Oh yes, that was a nice present. Thanks, guys, for letting me win.
Well, yeah. Riley, I think Riley came out the winner there, didn't you?
Only by a little bit. Sorry.
By not $40 or something.
Oh no, it wasn't. Yeah, well, 20 maybe. Yeah, it's not bad.
So, are you going to let us in on what we're talking about?
Oh, I opened up a nice Sarkhan the Unbroken.
There you go.
It's nice.
Yeah.
I haven't got a deck from yet, but I'll think of something at some point, probably.
Yeah, my birthday, yet you got the present.
Well,
you could have given it
sometimes
to me.
You got to share, you know. It can't be all about
and sometimes
you.
Sometimes you don't have to share.
Sometimes you don't. Yeah.
And on this occasion, it was an occasion not to share.
Yeah.
I stand behind your decision, Riley.
We shared in the experience.
We did.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty good. We opened, two packs each, so 8 packs, and one of them had a Planeswalker in it. I mean, that's pretty good odds.
The Planeswalker was in the first pack, right?
Yeah, it was.
So there you go. So I
we could have just walked away right then.
Well, they're in a mythics. I got that 3-cost myth.
Yeah, Shawcrash or Elemental. Yeah, that's right.
I knew how it works. I was like, okay, it had an orange thing on it.
Well, anyway, before we tread all over the Magic Players podcast, let's go away and come back with a bit of Star Realms.
All right.
Star Realms. That was a good blob, by the way. Speaking of blobs.
Speaking of blobs.
Segway.
Anyway, Star Realms. What's it about, Matt? What's the narrative? What's the objective of Star Realms?
The objective is very simple. crush your enemy.
Long pause there.
Crush
it's
your
very
enemy.
Simple. Yeah.
Everybody starts off with 50 points, and you've got to reduce your enemy to 0 points to win the game. That's it. That's the objective.
Cool. Is it point? Do they call it points today? I thought it would.
Yeah, I'm going to say it because I know I will. Authority.
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 It's pronounced authority.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 50 authority.
Authority. Yeah.
Is that
50 authority?
What's that supposed to mean?
I'm going to have. I can't. Help
your
it.
Influence on the galaxy, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
suppose.
Okay. Yeah. So you get whittled down to no That's influence and. You can just get stuffed, you know.
So what's worse, like being dead or being powerless? I guess that's what they're trying to tell you.
Well, that's it. That's what it represents, power. It represents your power and influence throughout the galaxy. And if you've got none of that, then you ain't got nothing.
Yeah. Okay, so in a narrative terms, what's happening in this game? Yeah.
So everything starts here on planet Earth, funny enough, in the far future, where we've become a star-faring race and gone off to explore the galaxy. And...
Is it within our galaxy? Is that where it's supposed to take place? It's from.
Oh, I think we've gone beyond.
It's just somewhere in space.
Somewhere in space, yeah. Right. But they do talk about Earth being the centre of one of the.
To those days.
Yeah, one of the groups. Yeah. So there are four groups in the game, competing factions, if you will.
Yeah.
The Trade Federation is one of them.
That's
Blobs,
the blue one.
The blue one, yep. Yeah. That's the one that has the closest ties to Earth as we know it.
Yeah.
Earth is the center of their universe, and basically they are traders and...
They're in...
Economics. The economics
is their building, aren't they? So yeah. They're reflected on the cards with life and money, really.
They do. They generate lots of authority, so that's their represents their hold... over the universe, because at the beginning they were the universe, you know. So humankind have spread out into space, and they represented the dominant power.
Yeah.
Now, what happened? The other factions came about because, as what happens with power, when it starts to get far-reaching, then your influence starts to decrease, and you have, you know, like a tentative hold over those outer regions.
Sure.
And then, of course, the Blob come along and invade everything.
So the Blob, what's the Blob?
The Blob are
the Green faction.
The Greek faction.
The Green, not the Greek.
The Green faction.
Yeah.
They're your typical xenomorphic invader alien presence.
War nutcases.
Yeah, war nutcases. Yeah.
Like what
Although a bit misunderstood, I think.
Yeah.
You know, are their intentions just to create havoc and...
No, they're not, because you can ally with them, but, you know, more of that later.
They certainly are the most combat-centric of the four factions. Mm. The other two factions being the Star Empire, who represent that edge of the galaxy sort of stuff. So humankind... Of course, they can't govern everything. That's the problem. Mm. And so splinter
factions... These are the farmers right out on the outreaches of the galaxy, aren't they?
Yeah, you're... spice miners and your, moisture.
moisture farmers. Your terraformers.
Yeah, they're those.
Who still have to send their taxes back to the Trade Federation.
And they're unhappy about that.
So they what do they do?
Well, they found a leader, they got behind him, and in a relatively bloodless coup. I don't know how many lives have to be lost to have a relatively bloodless coup.
Even if you just skin your knees, you trip over a rock on the way to say, I don't want to do this anymore. It's no longer bloodless, is it?
Yeah, so they're splitters. They split and they form their own faction.
A very shiny one.
A very shiny one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's a fourth faction who have a similar story in that they're left to their own devices out in the middle of nowhere, the Machine Cult. And these are nut jobs that have basically turned to religion. Only they've come to worship technology as their religion and believe that, you know, they're relatively few in numbers, and they believe that they need to have the best technology to be able to dominate the galaxy and to spread their interests far and wide.
So their cards sort of reflect that as well, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
It's usually about helping you thin out your deck, copying other... good technology that's around. And
each of the factions has what you call a strength and I guess a particular style of play.
Yeah.
And we'll get into more about that later, I think. But they're very different. So would you call it asymmetric, in that they're asymmetric in four ways?
I would say they have different strengths.
Yeah.
Right. They all are good at and focus on different things. So,
I think blobs are out to hurt you. Federation's about to get your authority and life back. Your machine cult's about improving your deck and maybe. What was the fourth one?
The Star Empire.
Their
main goal is
Star Empire. They're kind of about weakening the other teams, aren't they? They're like
forcing your opponent to discard cards and stuff like that. That's it. So that's a basic narrative. These four warring factions come together to expand their realm of influence, and of course, the winner will be the faction that comes out on top. With the highest amount of influence left after the combat settles. Now, this is not to say that one faction will take on all the others, or it's not one faction against another. It's the only way you're going to win is to combine the efforts of each of these different
factions.
To create a balanced deck or a dominant deck, depending on your style of play.
And that's how the blob paragraph on the information that comes with the game reads. It's like they start out going, oh, the blobs, they come in, it's just a spaceship. And when they managed to get the spaceship, there was nobody inside it. It was just this amorphous goo. Yeah. And they realized that was a person. And it's like they're writing it to go, these guys are so bad and evil and just want to destroy everything. And they're thinking, but shit, we need them to ally. So they sort of became good and you can trade with them. Because any faction can trade with any faction, right?
That's right, yep. What they didn't realise is they should have brought straws along, then they could have just sucked up that blob straight away, and then that would have been the end of it.
Pretty much. Okay, so is there any other flavour that comes with the game?
Well, you can go into the history of the backstory, which starts with the Trade Federation, and it goes into how their influence started to wane as they stretched further and further out from their known world, centre of the universe. And it's just about that shifting balance of power. There's not really too much more backstory.
You don't really need to know that either, is it? It's just like it just colours it in, just gives it a bit of a world. All right, so Justin, what do we get in the pack?
Yeah, so
what do you buy?
Extremely nice. So it's really well produced. It comes in a to fit card box, and you're buying 120 cards, plus you get some authority cards, which is like an effective life counter. We didn't have any users, so.
No, that's probably they probably don't need to have, isn't it?
But more on that later. You get a big stack of ships, and you get two starting decks. So the starting decks are a deck of 10 cards, and they're pretty basic. And then all your pretty stuff's in the stack.
Yeah. That's the interesting thing, isn't it? It's like you buy Star Realms, you're ready to go for two people.
Exactly.
Yeah,
right.
It was a two-player game, isn't it? It's designed for two.
Typical deck builder.
Magic's a two-player game.
What? Yeah.
Here's a booster pack, Riley. Go and play with nobody.
So you can imagine it's a cheap two-player game, really. It costs $12 to get into it, or $10 to get into it, whatever. And all you need is just a land, and then But it's a typical deck builder. They usually combine enough in there so that you can grab a mate, go play. That's what hooks people in, and then they offer expansions and stuff like that.
And it totally is as well. You can just buy it. You can get two sets of Star Realms and just jam them all together like we did and play four-player in a variety of different ways.
But as far as the product goes, it's real clean. It comes out standard card sizes, so it fits in all your standard binders and sleeves. And
the cards are pretty.
And very easy to read.
They're not messy at all, are they? They're very well put together.
Clean. It's very easy to see what each card does and how it does it, which is very good.
And that could be, like the guys are, MTG players, so they know that looking at a card and being able to just know what the card does without having to sit down and read it for 5 minutes.
Yeah. It's got their stamp all over it. I have to say that knowing the heritage of this game and who it's been developed by, it's plain to see that these guys know the inside and out of deck building style games. Yeah. It's very typical. Dominion is another example where it uses the same sort of thing, where you have generic cards to start you off, and it's the way you buy into. So we'll get into that when we talk about mechanics, but it's a very common implementation of that.
It's nothing that's going to blow anyone's mind who's played a deck builder before. Or quarry is a dice building sort of thing. So how do you go about it, Riley? What do you do?
Well, you start off with your starter deck of 10 cards. You draw a hand of 5, and then that gives you two resources mainly. It gives you money to buy more cards with, or damage to apply to your opponent to whittle away at their authority.
Yeah.
So with the money that you get, I think it's just called trade in this game.
Yeah, trade.
It's just generic money. You use that to buy in cards from this thing called the trade window, which is a set of
five cards
laid out in between the two players from the main stack of cards, which contain all the ships and bases and stuff.
Yeah, so once the 20 starter cards are out, the rest of the cards are pretty much just in one big pile, aren't they?
And everything's just in one big pile.
And the explorers.
Oh, and then there are explorers too, which are, you know, you can buy them into your deck if there's nothing good in the trade window. So you just buy cards, fold them into your deck, discard them all. It's very similar to Dominion and other deck building games.
What I love about this is the fact that all your cards have something to do. Every single one of them has a purpose and can be used in one way or another. So there's nothing left behind. So if you're a card of five hands, you use your card of five hands all five of them, one way or another, which I think is very efficient, and it's a clever mechanic. So you've got nothing left over at the end. You don't have to struggle with, okay, what cards am I going to play? Because you know you're going to play them all.
Yeah, you just play all of them.
Yeah.
I really like that.
And the order you play them in isn't important either.
That's the thing I really liked about it.
It's just you can just lay it all out on the table and it's there.
And there's no defense. So you say, right, Matt, I'm going to hit you for 5. It's just that's just happened. And there's no counter spells or
there's no
defense or anything like that.
Defense, you could say there is defense in the form of your bases.
Yeah, that's true.
Which are one of the card types.
But there's no surprises in an attack, is there? So if I've got 5 attacks, so I would hit you for 5. The only way you can prevent that from damaging is to have there's 2 bases, isn't there? Like everything in this game is a ship, except for bases. Mm. And you want to tell us a bit about bases, how they work?
The bases, there's 2 types. There's outposts, and then there's regular. Is it just bases and
outposts? Yeah, they're just called bases. Yeah. Yeah.
They're still bases, but
there's a different
off.
Type. Yeah. So there's one type that you can you put out, and it gives you benefits. And it's an ongoing, every single turn, you get some sort of a benefit, whether it's extra combat, whether it's extra trade, whether it's a boost to other ships. And then there's the outpost, which really, the outpost is probably the most useful. They don't generally have extra effects, but strong effects, but what they do, it always comes out, doesn't it? What they do, blow up, fuck.
They've got outposts and they've just got generic bases. So a generic base will just have a shield saying, if you want to kill me, it's going to cost whatever's in that shield. So say it was 5. Now you can choose whether you want to destroy that sort of base, right? But if it's an outpost, you have to go through it.
That's where I was trying to get with that.
Yeah.
So it's like a force defense.
Yeah, you have to go through that to get to the player.
And indeed, I played the longest game I ever played today, and it was essentially down to just I managed to get a lot of outposts, and I just kept throwing them out there. And they kept getting destroyed, but that was buying me time to thin out my deck, get a whole bunch of powerful cards together, and I kind of just went infinite towards the end because it was just draw a card, and...
One thing I will say about the simplicity of the design is that you can very much play this game open hand. Like, you get your deck of cards and you know you hold them up close, but you don't really need to hide anything.
No,
because you're just putting everything down every time. With the defenses and the bases and the outposts, they stay on the table. So you can really just keep slapping those cards down.
Yeah, so the bases are the only thing that you don't draw back up and put to your discard pile. They stay out on the desk. So. Yeah.
Your permanence, if you like.
Yeah. Now, how does the interaction between... We talked about the factions, and that is really important because all factions have bases. All the different ships have different... And they're all from different factions. All factions have ships. All factions have bases. So what?
Yeah. So the factions are really great. So Magic the Gathering has got, you know, your white, blue, black, reds and greens. Star Realms has red, yellows...
Blues
and greens.
Yeah.
So they're the 4 factions that we mentioned earlier. What the mechanic is, if you play one ship of one colour, if you play a second ship of the same colour, extra effects come into play.
Yeah.
So it could be extra combat or extra damage to the opposite player. It could be some more money for your turn. Or it could be a mechanic such as draw a card, forced to discard another card. And that's where the combos come in. So, yeah, you could play this game every colour, but you're minimising your chances of proccing those.
They call that the ally.
Ally system, yeah.
Yeah, we kind of call it trigger because we're kind of used to the magic lingo, aren't we? But it kind of works.
So, the ally system, super cool for getting those big, long runs. And in Dominion, you're always sort of trying to build a deck that thins itself out, very similar to Star Realms here. Just less cards. So less
it's just the machine cult, really, that has discard cards. That's the main one to have it. They have a lot of cards that help you thin out.
No, they're great. They're all about making your deck as efficient as it can be, so you're always drawing something good.
And that was, I said that really long game that I had today, was I was getting hit hard, but then on the next go that it was, I was playing against Travis, he would have then a handful of Scouts and Vipers still, where I was constantly thinning my deck out. Eventually, I managed to put out all these bases, and then my entire hand that I drew, because it had been thinned out, was just hard-hitting ships, that's how I got in front.
There is a bit of a balance between them. So you build a dual-colour or a tri-colour magic deck. In Star Realms, you sort of see yourself going two ways. Like, if you went mono-blue or just straight Trade Federation, you're going to be stacking a lot of health or a lot of authority and a lot of money, but you're not going to be hitting hard.
Yeah.
Nothing really.
It's difficult to do that, though, because of the trade window and how it works, not all of the ships are available all of the time. So you've got to kind of judge what's the best thing available when it's available. And sometimes the right answer is not buying any of it and forcing your opponent to buy some crap out of there.
That's it.
Yeah.
So that way you get access to the better ships.
You get the better ships,
We mentioned the Explorers earlier. They're pretty great. So Dominion, you've got you buy money, so you can buy 1, 2, 3. And that's more cards. And I really like what Star Realms has done here. They've only got the one money card, and that's the Explorer. Now, one thing we haven't mentioned is the trash mechanic.
Yeah.
So the Explorer is buying money. You get 2 credits instead of the standard 1 on your opening hand of cards, the Scout. And there's a trash ability, so you can get that extra money out of your deck so you can stop drawing it later in the game, and you use a trash ability trashing means you remove it from your deck completely.
Yeah, not in the discard pile. That game's gone from the game.
Gone for the game.
And you get an extra ability. So on the Explorer, you get to do 2 extra damage. On some of the bases, you can trash them to do additional damage or trash them to get some extra cash.
Yeah, other ships have that too. So you can trash them to do all these other things.
And the great thing about it, that can sound kind of confusing because you've got 3 things on one card, but you can do all 3. You can take the money, trash the card. You can really do everything on those cards. And I really like the pool system that they've put in. You've got your combat pool, your trade pool, and your authority pool if you're gaining health that turn.
Yeah, that's what I liked about it as well, because there was not any of that pressure of saying, okay, these are the cards I'm going to play. Okay, I'm definitely going to trash my Explorer, and there it is. It's gone. It's out of the game. And then coming back and going, oh, I needed the 2 money from that. Well, it's already in your money pool, so it's just there. So you can just say, so it seems very reasonable. You're not going to have judge calls or that little bit where it puts pressure on your opponent to go, look, I'll let you have it. I know what you tried to do there, and you can stay there, because that can just be like a bit of a narky thing that can occur in these sort of games. And it's just not present in this game at all, is it?
And like being ex-Magic pros, the creators, you can see that maybe they were trying to teach this game to people that weren't very familiar with the system, and they're seeing what's get caught up. So, man, this is your draw step, and this is your main phase. There's none of that.
Yeah.
It's just throw the cards down, let's count up what you got, and do what you want to do. Very simple, point-and-click sort of.
There is a tournament scene for this, though. So, there's a very active tournament scene, in which case I think you'd find that keeping track of your money, keeping track of your combat value is quite important. So if you go throwing away Explorers just because you want the combat value, forgetting that it's also a record of how much trade you've acquired, then you could find someone turning around saying, well, no, you've trashed that. There's no record. You don't have your trade there, so it doesn't count. So I don't know. I don't know whether it's a tactic or not, but I tend to sort out my trade first and then do my my combat, because just that way I know I can see how much trade I've got access to, get that out the way, then worry about the combat.
I've been leaning towards that as well. Because sometimes there's an option. You know, it's like you can have this, you can have so much money, or you can do damage.
Yeah.
So it's, I think that's the best way to do it as well, is have a look at how much money you have, see what's available, and then if you don't need to have two money or damage, if you don't need that two money, then you can go, right, I'm going to do damage with that and do that later. And it's rare that you need to get that damage in first, unless you're towards the end of the game where you just, you know, you see they're on 20 life and you're thinking, I might be able to stretch for that.
Yeah, or you've got to pick off some outposts or something.
Yeah.
The effects are the things you've got to get out of the way first, I think.
Sorry, that's true.
So before you do anything...
Because there's drawer cards and stuff.
Yeah.
Draw a card, discard a card, make your opponent discard a card, remove something from the trade window. Now, that's an important one. So if you've got one of your outposts that allows you to scrap something, I think the blob is very good for this, for getting rid of trade cards, trade window cards.
Exclusively them.
Yeah. So you can get rid of something that's particularly powerful. Maybe you can't afford it, but one of your opponents can. You can get rid of that card out of there before they have access to it. So that's...
Yeah.
Or maybe it's one of the strong cards in a colour they're buying. So you just get rid of it.
And there's no point in counting up all of your money if one of the triggers is draw a card, because then you're going to draw a card and that might
extra money on it.
And it's going to change all of your thoughts about what you're going to choose to do.
The great thing I gleaned from all of that is that you guys are talking about different ways and how you do your phases and stuff. It's awesome that we have that flexibility. So in Magic, you must do this in the draw phase. You must do this in the post combat and all that sort of stuff. Star Realms really opens it up for you to work where your mind goes first. So you're like, you want to spend money first. You want to kill people first.
It's very flexible, very forgiving, isn't
extremely.
It, in how you do things and when you do them.
And, when I play, I mentally, you call it a pool. I've just got a big, red circle here with a number in it, and I've got a big yellow number here with trade in it. And that's what I'm saying in my mind's eye, just pumping all this stuff out. Very flexible product. And just mentioning the trade row here. It's interesting that there's such an active tournament scene because it's such a luck-driven mechanic. you're shuffling a deck.
I don't know. That's what I was going to ask.
You've got a... It's all about judgment and percentages, isn't it?
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess draft format, right?
Yeah, it's basically just drafting. Yeah. So you may see a nice one-cost ship, but they're not very useful. They're handy earlier on, I suppose. But they're the kind of thing you want to get rid of later on if you can.
Yeah. Or they're a ramp.
Yeah.
Basically, they ramp you into
ships. It's the same as any deck building game, where it's all about increasing the value of what you draw and giving yourself as many options as possible when you draw cards. That's what it comes down to.
I think they must have had that in mind. Being, Magic the Gathering Hall of Famers, they must have really picked apart that game itself to get to the roots of what, the basics of what do they need in a deck builder, in a train. And they've got good examples to go by, Dominion and another one. And we keep coming back to Dominion because it's accepted, it's acknowledged pretty much as the grandfather of
all deck builders. It's just sort of the baseline of all deck building games.
But there are many more than that, especially lately there's stacks of them coming out.
Yeah.
The Legendary, for example. Arctic Scavengers is another one. So there are stacks out there, and their Ascension is another one. So you could just rattle off names because they've all got similar style mechanics, but it's something that makes them all unique. And I think it takes two people who are overly familiar with the game to decide what do they leave out, what do they keep to build a new game. And I think that brings clever...
But I think it's a distinctly different skill built playing. We've talked about Magic a lot because the designers of this game have played Magic. But this, as a deck builder, I think it's a completely different skill. And you're not drawing into a deck of cards that you know what you're hunting for, in a way, because you've got a shared pool of cards, the percentage of that a card will come up is equal for you both, and they could whip it out from it. So you can't say, right, as soon as I see such and such a card, I need to get that, and that's what's coming in. Or you can't go into the game with a preconceived plan about what you're going to do. Because we could come up with ideas now about, you could, like I was saying, set out a whole bunch of outposts, make sure you get a whole bunch of cards to scrap cards, thin out your deck, get a good strong base of cards, and then just hit them for everything. Yeah, if you could do that every time, that'd be perfect. Yeah. But
you find you're cycling through very quickly, especially in the early game. You're cycling through your draw deck. Oh, I don't know. Every second hand, basically every second hand.
But you're at the mercy of the trade robot at all times, aren't you? You know.
Well, if nothing comes up that's attractive to you, that's going to help you with what you've already got in your hand. You've got your. It's an open slate to begin with. You might look at what comes out, what there's more of. If there's more Trade Federation cards, okay, it might make sense to go into building up your authority because everyone else is going to be looking at that as well. It's a good way to, I guess, get an early handle on the game by increasing your capacity to generate authority. Mm. It's a complete opposite. If there are lots of blob cards out there, you know you're going to be heading for a lot of combat. So you want to get in, everyone's going to want to get straight into that. So it becomes an arms race, which is essentially that's what it is. You know, you might be lucky enough to pick up two cards in the early game, and then you may be able to get into two, three, four cards in one turn if the mechanics of the game are working for you and you're generating a lot of trade. So I did find in those games that we played, a couple of times I managed to get two, three, four cards quite consistently. They are varying costs. So I managed to get one pretty good card, and then I'd come up way with a couple of supporting cards, and which I found that enabled me to get into getting rid of cards I didn't want, cycling through my draw deck quicker than I otherwise would have, I think.
Are the colours that come out, anyone got any strategies before? If you see a trade row come up and it's leaning heavy into one colour, do you aim for that colour? Do you avoid that colour? Is it based on what the cards are?
Yeah, I think it depends what the cards are, because you've got to pick the strongest cards at the time. It's just like drafting in Magic or drafting in anything where you have limited resources to pick from. You've got to pick the strongest resource. It doesn't matter. Like, if four of the five cards in the trade row all belong to the Trade Federation and the strongest one belongs to the Machine Cult, you should pick the Machine Cult one, obviously. Yeah. You know, and like earlier on, there's going to be, your opponent won't be able to buy the cards, so you're going to get some of them, but it should just be
picking
the strongest
card. I think that works because, if you take that one Machine Cult card out and then replace it with a, like you said, there was four other Trade Federation cards, and you replace it with another one, so you're looking at five Trade Federation cards, you've still got the strongest card that you've seen so far, and then you can draw
in... And then
you're
going to get the second strongest
Because the factions can mix and match, you can just go into the Trade Federation there anyway, can't you?
Yeah, sometimes I'll just buy the card that I don't want to see played against me, it may not fit into my particular cycle, but the great thing about the way the game's been designed is that it's not like you can't play it. There's nothing that will activate that card. So even if it's a turkey in regards to the rest of your deck, it will still come out, it will still do its job.
Yeah, so you can have one card from a particular faction with a fantastic trigger on it that's never going to happen because...
Stop your opponent having it.
It brings up, I think, an interesting situation where you have what if everything in the trade row is more than five trade, six, seven, eight trade, which can
early
happen
early on in the game.
Nobody can buy a thing.
That's where your explorers.
Well, I've had that happen at least one game where you just have to invest in explorers until one of you gets lucky enough to draw something that lets you buy one of the cards.
And that's the cool thing about the explorers with the trash ability on the card, because then as soon as you have those, you can just junk them and get rid of them. I've played games where I've bought an explorer and then next round I've shuffled my discard pile, drew the explorer, taken the two money, and then just immediately just discarded it just because I'm thinking my hand is getting strong enough, I don't need that money. Because there is a certain turning point, isn't there, where you're not that bothered about buying cards anymore.
Yeah, when money doesn't matter anymore and it's all about just throwing as much damage as your opponent as you can.
So you rely on what you've already purchased and hoping that you can cycle into that.
But the other thing with that is then you've left the trade row stale. And if your opponent isn't interested in any of the cards there, they're going to have to suck it up and buy some of them, so get some new stuff
in there.
Just
start cycling, yeah.
Yeah.
So then their deck gets worse.
And there are cards that say, just clear the trade row, aren't there?
Just remove a card from a trade row.
Remove a card.
I think, and we said exclusively, that's a blob thing. They're able to get rid of cards out of the trade row. The Machine Cult will get cards out of your hand quicker than any other faction. The Star Empire will get opponents out of your It's Easter, you know, I'm mouthful of chocolate.
Matt, discard your words.
Drunk again.
So the Star Empire are particularly good at getting your opponent to discard their useful cards.
And drawing you cards.
Yeah. So I think...
Yeah. And defensive-wise, I had a flip through it earlier. So the Blob Empire have the least bases. They have 5 bases. And none of them are outposts, so they don't really care about defense at all.
No. Yeah.
Then the Machine Empire have 6 bases. All of them are outposts. And on average, they have the strongest strength. They're the toughest ones to get through. Then the Star Empire, they have 7 bases, and 6 of them are outposts, and they're like a bit weaker on average. And then the Trade Federation, they only have 4 outposts out of the 7 bases that they get. So they have more bases, but only 4 of them are outposts, and they're the weakest ones by a little bit. So they're more for support and stuff. And the Machine Cults are the most defensive of the factions. Yeah. They're also the best for sorting out your deck, though. So.
Did you have a look at how many... You know, so if you've got bases out there, they act as a trigger for your cards that you play. Was there a difference in how many cards had triggers on them?
No, it all works out much for muchness after then. So each faction has 20 cards that makes up all of the cards for that faction. How they're distributed in cost is a bit different, though. So... Each faction has 1 8 cost and 1 7 cost and 2 6 cost cards. And they're all the strongest ones. For the Blobs, the Machine Empire, the Machines and the Star Empire, those three, their top cost cards are all bases. And for the Trade Federation, it's a ship.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is nice. And then below that, your 1 2 3 4 and 5 cost cards, there's a bit of variation. In how many cards there are at each cost. So you're more likely to pick up Blobs cheaper, followed by the Star Empire, whereas the Federation are more sort of, they're flat. They're basically, they have the same number of cards at each cost.
Yeah. So you might find it easier to come out swinging, buying Blobs if they're there, but then that's not really going to win you the game, is it?
Not in the long term. No.
Yeah.
And that's the interesting part. You could, aggressive in this game is ships only. You just want to dish the damage. You're like, outposts are dead cards in the way that they can do damage, but only under ally circumstances. So if you want to go aggressive in this by ships, you've got nothing to stop the damage from coming through to you. I find that really good, the sort of the mechanic there, just of
and outposts can buy you time.
Yeah,
and
a lot of time.
as can Trade Federation can buy you time in terms of giving you lots of life. But neither of them are really going to win you the game.
Okay, like the first game, Riley and I played on Thursday, went for a bit.
Half
an hour, just because.
Didn't you go through the deck?
Nearly.
Almost. We only about 10 cards left in it or something. Just because the outposts were up, and it was like, I rather need to kill this, and then back and forth for so long.
So do you think that it sometimes leads into a stalemate where nobody can get the edge up on their opponent until the right sort of cards come up, either in your draw or...
I suppose in theory, yes, but I've not seen it happen because you... I mean, so the Trade Federation, you'll gain 8 life in one turn, but on your opponent's next turn, they'll hit you for 15 damage or 20 damage. And by later in the game, the numbers get very high.
Yeah, the Star Empire have one of their Fleet HQ, which is their highest cost base... allows every card that you play, every ship that you play, to get +1 combat.
Yeah.
So if you manage to play, if you've already got that out on your board, and then you manage to cycle into 5, 6, 7 cards,
and you can, because they're telling you, like, the Star Empire is telling you to, a lot
draw
of their cards to draw cards.
So
you draw a card, you keep just going.
Potentially, you know, that's 7 points of damage plus the damage that each of the cards do individually.
Yeah. So the numbers get very high. So even if your opponent does have 3 or 4 outposts out, you can clear through them in one go, and then your opponent is unlikely to get that many outposts out again for a while. And in that time, you can chip away at them.
So. Yeah.
One of the superstar cards from that Star Empire is the Star Federation. I'm sorry. Is the recycling base. It's a 4 defense outpost. It allows you to discard 2 cards, that you don't want in your hand and draw two new ones, yeah. Which is great. So if you've got a power hand except for these two filthy scouts sitting there that you don't need, you can just fling them out, discard them, draw them another time, and draw two more, and then you'll get your power play and keep it running. And that ties in more with the...
I think the Machine Cult has a better one, which you can scrap two cards from your hand or your discard pile and then draw two cards from your deck.
Is that the Machine...
That's the Machine Cult. That's the good one for the Machine Empire, which is fantastic.
That's 8 cost, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Recycling Base, I believe, is cheap as, I think it's $4. Bucks, trade, Dolez,
I think
Skrilla.
The Blob can up you on that, though. They've got the Blob Carrier, which is a 6-cost ship, which is about middle of the range, which allows... It's 7 damage, but it allows you to also acquire any ship for free.
Yeah.
And put it to the top of your draw.
Yeah, that is pretty sweet, that one, isn't it?
So, very useful.
Which is great about the game. Like, we could probably do this round table for another 20 minutes about all this.
My card's better than your card.
Because it is quite balanced. Might want to talk about that experiment we tried, which is pretty silly.
Do we ever
want to talk about that?
On Thursday, just in, because we're a top brass professional podcast.
That's it.
Exactly. We're thorough.
We're nothing if not thorough.
And so we split the deck into the 4 factions, and we all grabbed a faction each. I ended up with the Blob.
I had the Trade Federation. Yeah,
You got the Machine Cult.
No, I had the Machine Cult.
Yeah, I had the Star Empire.
I had the Machine Cult. Yeah,
not that I got around to using it. Round one.
Yeah. So the idea was like we didn't have our starting hand of 8 scouts and 2 Vipers. We just had the whole kit in our hand, and I drew my first 5 cards. And the Blob. There's a Blob card. If someone want to pull it up, that'd be great. Was for every Blob card you play, you're able to draw another card. And so I had a whole deck of Blobs, right? So I was like, all right, so I'll play that, and I'll put this ship down, and I'll just draw another card. And here's another ship, and I just kept drawing through the whole
Blob
deck.
World.
Blob World.
There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a 8-cost base. This is a mega base. 5 combat, or draw a card for each Blob card you've played this turn. So
you just drew your entire deck.
That was the Broken Infinity combo. But the other one seemed pretty good. Like...
infinite combo deck.
But yeah, no infinite combos. I think that was about the only one I could see.
Mine was terrible. Trade Federation can't do anything by themselves. Dreadful.
And the same with the Machine Cult is they can't do anything by themselves either, because I was just... I had a whole bunch of cards that were really good at discarding cards that were in your hand, but...
Star Empire was probably not equal. I think the Blob was far superior, but... was the only one that will come close because it allows you to get rid of cards out of your opponent's hand.
Yeah.
So that's the only
one. And also draws you cards.
And generates a lot of combat as well because they're a very combat oriented.
Sort of a death by a thousand cuts sort of faction, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
Keeping in mind, listeners, that that was a experimental game extremely broken.
You should ever try at home.
Well, we gained a slight bit of confidence. We thought, we'll just invent our own game with these cards and realise how hard could it be?
Yeah.
Well, for a bit of change of format, how about we just put a hold on this, go to a quiz, and then we'll come back with expansions and different formats of play within Star Realms after the quiz.
That's great.
All right, let's do that.
Wild.
Quiz time. Has everyone got a sharpened pencil or a pen?
I'm going to scratch this into my arm.
Really? That sounds painful.
Would you like some paper?
That was badly organized.
All right. I came from a family barbecue for this thing, so I really wanted potato bag, instead I got a...
While we're sorting you out paper and pen, I'll give you a bit of a disclaimer that all of these questions, some of them may be Star Realms based, most of them are not, because... It would be extremely difficult to come up with a Star Realms only quiz because
list
it would...
all of the Machine cultures.
which trade 8 ships? Yeah.
How do you spell
fucking dull
machine?
As well? People at home that are just listening, I'll listen to this and find out a bit about Star Realms, and then there's a quiz that's just asking about Star Realms.
Never want to know.
No. That's all the information you need. All right, question number 1.
All right.
Okay.
Darwin Castle's other noteworthy deck building creation is. Multiple choice.
Yeah.
Good.
I've played that.
So Darwin Castle's other noteworthy
multiple
deck
choice.
Building
it's a great
creation.
Game. Yeah.
It's my favourite.
Not mine. Oh. Is A. Arctic Scavengers. B. Ascension Chronicles of the Godslayer. C. Eaten by Zombies. Or D. Dominion.
Gosh.
Okay. Four choices.
So which one is his other?
Multiple choices is good, but once you go past beyond C, I think the panic sets in.
I think it can't possibly be D then, because I've stopped listening by that point.
No, that makes sense.
A, B, C. In which case the answer is they're all D.
No.
You always turn down the
it's
D,
It's happened
Riley.
In my exams I often.
Yeah.
All right, number two.
Number two.
Robert Doherty owns, or owned, a chain of game stores that share the same name as one of the most respected Magic the Gathering teams in the history of Magic.
Oh, God. Multiple choice.
What is that name?
Multiple choice.
Is it A?
Yes, thank goodness.
Your Move Games. B. We Move Games. C. I Move Games. Or D. They Move Games Together.
Jeez.
So they had a Magic team that was called one of these.
Yep. And it led into a chain of stores. I don't. The funny thing about that is the last information I got was about 2009, so I'm not entirely sure that it's even open anymore, but I believe they may have gone into independent game publishing.
Right.
So it's a good thing we're not a fact-checking podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, that's about that's
who
all
does
the
our fact-checking?
We always check them after the show.
Yeah, that's right.
Just
yeah,
so we can
to see that I'm right or wrong.
Yeah.
You were totally wrong, man.
Okay. Question number three.
Question three.
What was the shocking shared truth behind the character played by Sam Rockwell in the moon mining film Moon and the character played by Tom Cruise in Oblivion? What was the shocking shared truth between Sam Rockwell's character in The Moon and Tom Cruise's character in Oblivion?
I love that movie, Moon.
It's a great movie.
It is a good movie.
It's a fucking brilliant movie. But what was the shared truth?
Shared truth. They're both wearing women's underwear whilst shooting every scene.
Is that shocking?
Yeah.
We're talking about, parliamentary procedure. It's probably not that shocking.
Okay, right.
Number four.
Q4.
Mila Jovovich gets decked out by which fashion designer in the futuristic blockbuster The Fifth Element? Which fashion designer?
Any fashion designer.
Decks out Mila Jovovich in The Fifth Element. And the whole film.
Oh, no.
Costume, wardrobe.
Yeah.
Sure. Good movie.
That is a good movie as well. Yeah. That's one of those movies. I wonder if you can go back and still watch. Have you, anyone was
you
listening?
Can, yeah,
you can.
I
is it still
it
all right?
Last week.
I think it was good. Yeah, it's still good.
Last week.
Oh, there you go.
Blu-ray, 10 out of 10. Bruce Willis.
Oh, good.
Can't go wrong.
I watched The Matrix again the other day, and it's just hanging in there with, when the effects just stick out like, oh, dear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there was a few things where you sort of, it looks started to look old.
It's like Jurassic Park. You can't watch Jurassic Park.
No.
You go back and watch Jurassic Park, you ruin it.
Yeah,
you can't do that.
Negative.
Yeah, for sure.
The version you have in your head is way better.
Yeah.
Okay. Question number five. At what rank does Star Realms sit on the Board Game Geek strategy game rank? Closest will win the prize.
11-2.
11-2.
Do we make up
where
numbers?
Where does it sit on the...
Where does it sit? So what numerical order, where on the numerical order does it sit?
Also, there's the best strategy game in the universe. That's a number one.
That'd be a number one.
Star Realms is somewhere... Now, I saw a list... I did look at a list of this, but I don't know if it's good.
Shot in the dark. There's only something like, I don't know,
11.
There could only be like 20 on there.
30,000 entries or something.
Oh, it's close.
Right. Oh, okay.
I think I was quite stunned by this because I don't really feel like, you're saying there's a large luck element. I was quite stunned at how high it was or how high it rated on a strategy. But I think that was to do with the awards or something. I thought, it doesn't really feel like a strategy game. Anyway.
I find it funny that we say luck and there's probably people at home like, no!
No way!
No, there's no luck.
There's so much skill in this.
Yeah. Most beautiful game with this all scrubs.
I'll ask you about that after this, after the quiz, actually.
Darwin and Robert are sitting back there. There's no luck involved.
What do you mean? It's all numbers.
Yeah, it's all numbers. Number six. This is one of my favourite one-line ones. Yeah, yeah. Oh. Identify the titles of these space operatic films based on the following one-line clues.
Oh, so this is a multi-parter.
Yeah, multi-parter. No, I have seven questions, but each of those questions may have one or more parts.
All right, so 6A, I think we're looking at.
So you're a teacher. Right.
Yeah, there's A to G.
Oh,
cool.
God.
Okay. To G. Right,
or 1 to 7.
I can't go past C.
Yeah. <we're...
laughs> All right. A.
I'm still writing the list of G. A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
All right, I'll wait. There.
All right, we're there.
No one can help Dave.
How would you say that?
No one can help Dave.
Is that just how you'd say? Okay. Yeah.
All right, what movie?
Yeah.
All right. B. They have a problem.
I'll narrow it down. Like, how many times has that been said in moviedom ever?
Well, it could have been any number of
films. When you're talking about the movies in general, it's part of the theme. It's part of their, or it might be part of a catchphrase, or it might be part of the story.
Yeah. You know? All right. So it's like movie poster. This movie's coming out next month.
Yeah.
They have a problem.
That's it.
They have a problem.
Okay. Number C, or letter C.
Yeah.
Or letter three.
B&L will clean up everything while you're away.
B&L
will clean up everything while you're away. D. A bunch of roughnecks.
A bunch of roughnecks.
Necks so rough.
This is where he's not getting into that. I'm probably going to say the answer here, but you know, last time he did a quiz, he had something like Space Cowboys or some shite like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, dreadful like that. Sounds like a good answer.
Yeah, that's when he said the alien invasion movie was Avengers. And I was just like, cry yourself to sleep.
Yep. D was a bunch of roughnecks.
A bunch of roughnecks. A bunch of roughnecks.
When you hear the answers, you know, you go, fuck yeah.
That's what we're here for.
Of course. E, Robbie the Robot gets caught up in Shakespeare. Robbie the Robot gets caught up in Shakespeare. And that might be one of the more obscure ones.
Yeah.
But we'll see how we go.
Robbie the Robot gets caught up in Shakespeare. Wow. Now, these all space themed, are they?
Yeah, so yeah. They're all space.
Space.
Probably.
Man, this is so much easier when you're listening to another podcast do it and you're driving to work.
You're staring at like, you fool.
You're just getting the same mental
thinking.
Muppets.
Oh. Okay, F.
Muppets in space.
Yeah. The Philadelphia Experiment meets Hellraiser in space.
Oh, yes. oh, shit.
Space Chimp 6.
The Philadelphia Experiment meets Hellraiser in space.
That's an obscure one, isn't it?
Yeah, I've got to include one.
I watched that movie.
Shall I tell you who's in it?
No.
Is it?
No. Riley's pretty confident.
Yeah, I got this.
He's looking pretty confident.
All right.
You had that really weird monkey one last week as well.
G. The last one.
Yeah.
Perhaps the driest space opera of them all.
The driest
space opera of
them all. Oh, okay, yeah.
PZ.
I think I got that one.
And that was question six, parts one through to G.
Looking forward to the answers on that one, too.
Yeah, Star Wars is exciting.
It's going to be intense. Seven, final question.
Okay.
Each of the Star Realms factions has a particular strength and game effect. Here we go. So the Blob, you need the Trade Federation, the Star Empire, and the Machine Cult. So this will test your knowledge of the factions and what they can do.
Well, we're
so you need
all
to write down
it, so
for each of them.
Yeah.
You need to write down what their main strength is and then what their primary card game effect is.
It's a bit subjective, isn't it? Because I think the Blob are rather well-dressed, considering...
My considering best... The thing blobs. I like about most about them is that they're green. Yeah, it's the strongest thing.
Yeah.
They're all green.
They're all green.
Is that the answer?
The strongest thing is they're all green.
Well, I mean, you know...
So is this colour coordination? According to who? The game...
According to the information that the game provides.
Right.
So I took it straight from the book.
So
I'm just thinking the answering format here. You've got the thing that they're good at and then their effect.
Yep. Their major effect. Yep, okay. So there's four of them. This is potentially the biggest opportunity for dead air when everyone's really thinking. I'll just keep talking.
That's where it comes back to you.
We start talking about our great sponsors, Good Games Canada.
I think I quite like this format for my quizzes. a combination of movie trivia and
yeah, I
politics.
Like that. I do like that.
How would you compare this to other quizzes that you've taken part in?
Well, I would say better than the rest.
Yeah. It's like Matt talking himself up, minute. It's 60. Matt, the best guy ever, McHugh.
7 questions. Not all of them have one part. Does anybody need any of the questions again?
Can I have all parts of question 6, please?
All parts of question 6?
No,
okay,
joking.
Ready. You asked for it.
No.
They have a problem that's going to kill me, I reckon. Did you get anything for that?
For which one?
They have a problem.
Oh, man, there's so many it could have been.
I know.
Man. That was like the easiest one for me.
Was it?
Really, yeah. I'm the last
What's
one.
Justin
I agree
been
with
watching?
Justin. That's the easiest one.
It's got to be a
and
porny
I wrote
one.
The quiz.
Yeah. Barbarella.
I'll give you a clue. There's a number in the title.
Oh, come on. Come on. That's. No.
Look
Justin,
at his brain.
No.
Look
Bad
at his
Justin.
Brain.
Right. Bad Justin.
I want some videos. Look at his face.
Like, yeah, number
man.
In
He's
the title.
The massive dump right now.
If my quizzes were a visual medium, you'd think that, David's working on an egg.
He's just duking.
All right. Time's up. Let's go for some answers.
Yeah, let's do that.
Right. Answer okay. time.
Fine.
Who's going to keep... Riley, you are the eternal scorekeeper.
Am I?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. And everything we've ever played, right? Yeah,
he's got the biggest life pad with him.
The biggest life pad.
He just has a big, massive bulk.
Well, his PhD means he can multitask.
Yeah. He probably add them all
It really doesn't.
Okay, number one.
I'll add them up wrong.
Darwin Castle's other noteworthy deck-building creation is... A, Arctic Scavengers, B, Ascension Chronicles of the Godslayer, Eaten by Zombies, C, or D, Dominion. I didn't even plan that. D for Dominion.
Or A for Arctic Scavengers,
for Arctic
which is
Scavengers.
What I went for.
Wow.
That was my answer.
Okay.
Yep.
Riley says A.
I said B.
Yeah, it is B.
Know.
It's Ascension.
It is
I did
B.
my
Ascension.
Homework.
Yep.
All right.
Big guess, Strax again.
Yeah, man.
How
did,
I became a graduate.
Did my homework on the pod.
There you go.
Ascension,
That's
bang.
Cheating.
I didn't. Create the quiz with him. All right, number two. Robert Doherty owns or owned a chain of game stores that share the same name as one of the most respected MTG teams in history of Magic. The history of Magic. Was it...
Can't even read his own
Your
question.
Move Games, We Move Games, I Move Games, or They Move Games Together? Sounds like a book. Sounds like a kid's book. You know, one of those. Dick and Jane.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. And they moved games together.
Moved games together.
What do you think, Justin?
I said C because I really like the advertising potential for I Move Games.
Okay.
I think W.A. Salvage. I Move Games. I move them all day.
There you go. Right. Justin comes with C.
I went
David.
I went with We Move Games because I thought it was the only one that a team could have.
Okay. Yeah, that's the one I went for too. B, right. We Move Games.
The answer was A.
What was that?
Your Move Games. Your Move.
Your Move.
Your Move.
Right.
Yeah. Like Your Move.
Yes. Your Move
Games.
That makes more sense now.
Wait, <Yeah. laughs> one to me.
Yeah, clean sweep.
No, right. I wasn't. But
Number three.
I can do. There you go.
Number three. What was the shocking shared truth behind Sam Rockwell's character in The Moon and Tom Cruise's character in Oblivion, David?
Well, I didn't know how you wanted to say this, but they were both clones of a former version of themselves.
Okay, Justin?
I have no idea. I wrote both Legend of Citrus. Orange's man, just mess him up.
You're pretty safe on the moon.
So
there's not many citrus plantations. There's no citrus plantations.
I wrote that they were both clones, and I thought it can't be clones. Too many things do clones, so I said robots. I said they were both robots and bad actors. And that was the shocking shared truth.
See, yeah.
I disagree because
I think
Sam Rockwell's fucking phenomenal.
Yeah.
He's a great actor.
And even though I hate Tom Cruise, I still think he's not a bad actor because I've seen movies where I thought, oh, shit, I've got to sit through this guy. And then he wins me over by becoming the character.
Right.
I think it's only bad if you have to watch him on Oprah or something like that. You go,
all right,
like,
outside
Oscar.
Of when he's
yeah,
acting.
When he's playing...
When he's being himself.
Doing himself, yeah, when he's playing that role.
Have you seen The Unseeable with Tom Cruise? He's got his two front teeth in the middle of his face. So like,
oh, yeah, I've seen that thing on the internet, yeah.
Crazy. Like, stop driving and look it up. It's weird.
Yeah. Well, the answer was, yes, they're clones.
Oh. Yay.
David. Just pulling it.
Didn't Riley say that as well?
I crossed out
no,
clones.
No, he crossed it out and put robots.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Robots,
or maybe,
clones,
maybe I just wrote
thing.
It, they're clone robots. I'd...
Clone
oh, this
robots?
One's gonna be
if
good.
The film had kept going, that's what would have happened.
Here
no,
we go,
no,
testing question four.
Number four, Mila Jovovich gets decked out by which fashion designer in the futuristic blockbuster Fifth Element?
How fashionable?
Let's go with Justin.
I don't know the character's name, but I wrote Chris Tucker. Wasn't he the fashion guy in that?
That's his answer.
That's your answer. Okay, that's your answer. Riley?
I went Bruce Willis. He's got a very successful fashion line.
Okay, all right. We've gone off on completely different tangents.
I went Jean-Paul Gaultier.
Jean-Paul Gaultier was the answer.
Yeah, look at that.
Which fashion designer?
He's storming it.
I was looking to see how fashionable the hand was.
Any.
And we came up with Bruce Willis and Chris Tucker.
Bruce Willis has a fantastic range of shoes. Have you not seen them?
Chris Tucker's costume was all phenomenal, but it was all put together by Jean-Paul Gaultier.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's nice. I watched it last week. Justin.
Yeah. Just to help you with the quiz.
Well done.
All right, number five. At what rank does Star Realms sit on the Board Game Geek strategy game list?
15.
I went with 18.
18?
I stuck with 11.
Brave.
Okay.
11.
I were all pretty
much
close.
Much lower than that. 45.
Oh.
So,
David
the closest was 18 was the closest. Yeah. 45th.
What are the first 43?
Please. Have a look on Board Game Geek.
You know
you'll tell. We'll now recite 44 game titles for you.
I don't pay that much attention.
Which will never be reviewed on this podcast.
I can tell you which ones are higher. Not all of them.
What's number one?
I don't know.
Well, that's the one that matters.
The important one.
I can tell you which ones are. I can tell you which ones are higher, except for one of them.
Except for the important one.
Yeah, the one that's number one.
Something I don't own.
Yeah.
Or maybe it is. I don't know. All right. Number six, identifying the titles of these space operatic films.
Here we go.
This is going to hurt.
No One Can Help Dave. Riley?
Oh, 2001, Space Odyssey.
Yeah. No One Can Help Dave.
Yep, that's it. 2001, A Space Odyssey. B, They Have a Problem.
Dave.
Justin.
Do it, Dave. Come on, buddy. Did you come through?
Oh, yeah, David.
It's going to be something too. No, I put Aliens down in the end. No.
Apollo 13.
They had a big problem. Apollo 13.
I put Armageddon. They had a big problem in Armageddon.
Yeah, but it's Apollo 13.
All right. Yes.
Houston, we have a problem.
I'm sure they said in Armageddon too.
I said there was a number in the
Houston,
title.
We have a problem is different to
They
Have a Problem.
It doesn't have to be a space movie. I was going to say,
it doesn't have to be exactly the right quote.
I paraphrased an exact quote from a film.
You've just got to be thinking about the one I'm thinking
just
about.
Just like the film title doesn't have to be the exact film title. That's why I'm giving myself marks for each of these.
What game am I thinking of? You all got it wrong.
It's inside my head.
So Barbarella wasn't even a good second quote. All right.
No. C. BNL will clean up everything while you're away. Riley?
Wally.
I got Wally too.
Also Wally.
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 You've worked on that a lot, I can tell.
I bought this super cool Wally model for Travis when he was young, and he broke the track on it.
Oh, no.
So I could sort of glue it together to make it look all right, but there's no way I could give it back to a kid again, so... I took ownership of it. And now it lives pride and place in the shed, which is like the back cave.
That's very noble of you.
Yeah, thanks.
But it's pretty authentic, isn't it? Doesn't his tracks break at one point in the film? I think it does.
Yeah.
There you go.
It does, yeah.
All right, D, A Bunch of Roughnecks. David.
Space Cowboys.
Space Cowboys was my vote.
Wow. That's a good guess. I said Armageddon.
No,
they go drill an asteroid. That's like the roughest cut thing ever.
They're all pretty good guesses, and I give you like half a point for them.
I don't think you can.
I'm not going to. Because the answer was Starship Troopers. Rico's Roughnecks.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I never really warmed to that movie.
Ratchet's Roughnecks.
Yeah,
that was the name of the.
That was
the
one
unit.
Of those movies that everybody loved, but I could not enjoy.
Really, even the unisex shower scene.
The other one that I own, but I can't warm to. Oh, this is going to hurt. Firefly.
Really?
Yeah. I have never managed to make it through the first episode of
really?
Firefly.
Have you tried?
I've tried. Yeah. I've not managed to make it through the first episode.
Oh, that's good. Thanks, Riley. Thanks for coming.
Nah. I'm on your side, man. I'm with you. No, I've heard good things. Everyone tells me I would love it and I should watch it, but I cannot sit through that episode.
Did you
so
watch the
boring.
Movie?
I watched Serenity before I watched the series.
Yeah, I watched the series and I watched the movie. I've seen them all. But and I own it because I feel like I should.
Yeah.
But I haven't gone back to it. Let's keep the secret together, Riley, because I think
anybody else found out, we'd be ruined.
We will be ruined. People will be pointing us on the street for
moving
years.
Right along.
Yeah.
Robbie the Robot gets caught up in Shakespeare. What have you got, Justin?
I don't know if it was called artificial intelligence. Was it? I don't know. But it's really smart. The question's super smart.
AI?
It's not AI. I've got it wrong, but...
I don't know, because there's Isaac Asimov's short story with Robbie the Robot in it. But iRobot can't be the answer because that's not that story. So I put Lost in Space.
Okay.
I don't even know what Chappie is, but I put Chappie down because I'd heard it mentioned
that's
today.
It's yeah. Very yeah, I want to see that. That's not out yet, though.
Is it? Yeah, it is now.
Oh, shit, I'm going to see it. It's
that's
holidays.
A Blomquist.
Yeah.
Before you reveal the answer.
District 9.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Robbie the Robot's Robin Williams, right?
No.
Damn, I thought it was that Robin Williams.
No, it was Forbidden Planet.
Forbidden Planet.
Robbie the Robot from Forbidden Planet.
What was the Robin Williams
film? I never saw that.
Bicentennial Man.
Bicentennial Man, that was a good film.
Yeah.
That's also an Asimov book, I think. 52, that's one short story?
Like that.
1952, 54,
yeah,
Forbidden
something
Planet.
Like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was that long
ago. Oh, that was before my time, Matt.
Well, the movie itself was based on Shakespeare's story, The Tempest.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
That's why people would flock to it.
So he said Robbie the Robot. I thought Robin Williams, Bicentennial Man.
Right. Maybe after the pod, we can all sit down and watch it, Matt.
Why not?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay,
what, The Tempest.
Yeah, on
the
his iPad.
The penultimate one. The Philadelphia Experiment meets Hellraiser in space. What do you got, Riley?
Doom.
Whoa, bloody good answer.
I've got Event Horizon.
I too wrote that.
It's Event Horizon.
Oh, Mr. Smarty Pants, Riley.
Such a better answer. A bloody good answer.
We're against first-person shooters back in the last, like,
three
minutes.
Yeah, I know, it's wicked.
So I wasn't thinking
about it. But it was definitely Event Horizon because of the horror element. The
Doom was a horror with supernatural stuff.
Some sort of spaceship. I think
Doom counts as an answer. I'm giving myself a point.
No, you're not.
Cool. They opened up some sort of portal to hell from a space station or something like that.
Yeah, it was an experiment. You know, that's where the Philadelphia experiment thing
happened. Best line from that film, you won't need eyes where you are going.
Oh, boy.
Don't need them. No ass for you. It's like sweet.
Yeah. 7-0. Good piece of work. All right. Love and the last one. Perhaps the driest space opera of them all. I'll slap anyone who doesn't get it.
June.
Yes.
June.
That was a gimme.
Yeah.
That's good.
All right. And last question. Each of the Star Realms factors.
I don't even understand this question.
Okay.
how many marks are available for this question?
How many marks?
Probably four.
34.
I don't know. I just want to hear what you think. No points. Right. Okay. Let's say we stopped at 6. I just want to hear what you think.
No, this is how I was going to catch up.
No. All right, whatever.
Goalposts.
Score
it how
you like.
They're gone.
Cool.
7, the blobs. What's your assessment of their strength and effect?
I just wrote down one word for each thing. So their thing is combat. Like they get a lot of it. Yeah. And their ability is trade row elimination.
I stuck down damage because that's what they do. And they also draw cards and destroy bases and cards a lot. They destroy cards. So.
Yeah, I got attack, violence, that, you know, killing.
Attack and violence.
I just wrote attack.
Yeah. For the listeners, we're summing up really what each faction
does.
The Trade Federation?
Trade Federation, I wrote, they accumulate a lot of cash and authority.
Yep.
Yeah, money and life.
Yeah, life and productivity.
Good.
Yeah.
Star Empire.
Damage and card discard / draw. Because that's what they do. They draw you cards, make your opponents discard cards, and do some damage on the
Which
way.
Which I succinctly wrote as card management.
Okay. This guy's way too serious.
Gosh. You can tell. Yeah.
And the last one, Machine Cult?
I wrote scrap and combat. Or combat and scrap.
Oh, I wrote deck thinning and defense.
Yeah.
Because they're pretty defense.
I had defense.
I was into management by now, so I put hand management.
Jeez.
Removal, managing your hand. That's pretty much sums it up. All
hand
right.
Management's really important.
That's been the quiz. Who won, right?
All right.
David did.
David.
By 2 points.
Wow, close.
And you and I came joint last, Matt. With 3.
That makes up for the horrific scores. Or my horrific result after the pod. Well, no, what do we call them? Pack War.
Which I won, by the way.
Yeah, you won.
I came last by quite a
distance. All right, well, let's get back and we'll give you a bit of Star Realms expansions and what do we think and a bit of stuff about different formats you can play. Hey! We're back. Thanks for that quiz, Matt. That was good fun.
That was great. I won.
I'm glad I could expand your knowledge and expand everyone's experience of Star Realms.
There's an emphasis on expand there.
Expand?
Expand?
Let's talk about expansions.
Oh, expansions.
Yeah. Oh, I guess. It's just the conversation's heading that way anyway.
Most yeah. natural segue with this.
I try to make it as fluid and as natural as possible.
Smooth. So what's Star Realms got up its space sleeves for us as space far sleeves. As expansions?
Well, it has the Crisis expansion, which is actually a series of four smaller expansions in a like a booster format. Not really a booster format. It's more like a single blister. So you don't have. It's not a collectible card game. We're not talking about
like booster packs, don't they? But is that your entire expansion? Just the booster pack?
Yeah, all right. It's just a single pack expansion. Which and there's four of them. The first one of which is called Bases and Battleships.
Yeah.
Which
sounds good.
Yeah.
Let me guess what it has in it. Is it Bases and Battleships?
He's good. Oh, he's really
That's
good.
That's why they pay me the big bucks.
That's why he passed the audition and got on the show.
So the Bases and Battleships pack gets eight new ships and for your trade deck, and the Machine Cult gets an extra mega mech, they call it, and the Star Empire can lock down opponents' hands with a fighter base. So basically, this gives additional effects. You get 12 cards in each of the expansions. It actually names what you can get, but I've got no information on what they actually are.
Yeah.
But it seems like it's a combination of ships and
bases. Yep.
So the battleships, think bigger. Think the biggest ship they've got in the game currently, and then think along those lines.
Think bigger.
So think bigger.
Yeah.
Bigger.
So what's the other ones?
The next one is events. Now, this is a very different set of cards. This one... each one has a potentially game-changing effect.
Yeah.
So as soon as the card enters the trade row, so when it's drawn, the event takes effect. And happens.
Awesome.
It's like the game having
a bit
of
a go.
It does.
Yeah.
And then once the effects immediately happen, it's replaced with the next card. So it's one of those things that this happens.
Are there examples of the effect?
There aren't, but I can give you the names of them. You can probably extrapolate.
Yeah.
The black hole.
That probably wipes the trade window or something.
Bombardment.
Yeah.
Comets. Galactic Summit. Quasar. Supernova. Trade missions and warp jumps.
Okay.
So, it doesn't give a lot of information away apart from it will affect your board state, I would say. So, your bases will get.
It'll
affected.
Change something. Yeah. It'll flip your bases or change the trade window or something.
Try to see if I can find. I could probably find an example of cards, but. You know, I'll just keep moving on.
Yeah.
Heroes is another one. So this concept of individual characters enters the game.
Your pilots that will be in these ships.
So they're a new type of card. Each hero goes directly into play instead of going into your discard pile.
So once you buy them from the trade window, it just goes into play.
It goes into play immediately. And it's good for assisting your ally abilities. So that the hero will sit out there on the board and will give you the ability
to... Like a trigger
to,
for something?
Extra trigger effects. And gives you a boost. You've got the Cunning Captain, Admiral Rasmussen, a Ram Pilot, Blob Overlord, which makes me think of Baron Harkonnen from Dune for some reason. War Elder.
Obviously on your own with that thought.
The High Priest, Special Ops Director, and a CEO. You could guess the CEO.
These fancy superstar term. Hero
yeah.
CEO.
Yeah,
you can imagine it's all business all the time.
So which faction do you think he would be?
Trade.
Yeah, I'd imagine. Fleets and Fortresses is the fourth expansion.
Sounds cool.
So there's eight new ships and bases. The Spike Pod, which is they call an aggressive and useful new one-cost ship for the Blobs, and the Capital World, powerful new eight-cost base for the Trade Federation.
That's cool.
So, and this one you get a border fort, the Capital World, cargo launchers, custom frigates, Death Worlds, patrol bots, Spike Pods, and a Star Fortress. So, it doesn't say that they affect the game any other way, so no dramatic way. They're just additional types of ships and bases for you to use.
So, does it say how many cards are in these packs?
12. Yeah,
all
right. I'll have 12.
So there's four. So there's like 48 more cards.
They're
you
all
can
packaged
throw into
together.
Here. Yeah.
As well. So each individual, each expansion is an individual booster.
Booster. Yeah.
But all of them come in the same box. So yeah. So
but you don't buy the box. You buy the booster. Is that right?
Yeah, but if you're retailing them, you buy a box, and the box has I don't know a dozen of each in the box, sort of thing.
Yeah.
So they're the four known expansions. There is another one called the Gambit expansion, which I don't know too much about. I first saw this on the iOS version. It's like a window that you pop up in. It's an in-app purchase that opens new content.
Right.
But I think it. Oh, I've just found it. It contains 18 new cards. Oh, so there's a solo challenge.
Okay.
So finally got solo play. There's a cooperative challenge.
Is this just? Did you say this is just the iOS version?
No. This seems to be the actual. It's called Gambit. No, it's the Heart physical.
Okay.
Expansion as well. There's Merc cruisers that can ally for any faction. And then there's Gambit cards which give you player special abilities that they can use during the game. And then it goes into the individual cards, what they're called. So it's actually a combination of promo sets 1 and 2, which they put out when they did their initial Kickstarter, I think.
Oh, yeah, that Kickstarter. I went and looked over the Kickstarter the other day, and it was killing me because, you know, when you've having played the game and then you go back and you see all the alternate artwork and different cards and different
all the cool
stuff
yeah.
and
you
go like, oh, that would have been awesome to have, but I can't get it anymore. It's just disappeared into the ether. That's it. It's gone.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So they're the expansions that I can see.
Yeah. Now, when we played it within the base game, there's a whole bunch of different formats of play, and we gave 3 out of the 4 a crack. We'll tell you why we didn't get to the fourth one in a minute. Raid. What's that one about, Riley?
Oh, Raid was pretty fun. So Raid is basically one of the players. So these are all multiplayer
formats.
If you have
a mat with you, it's always Matt.
It's always Matt. So you're looking at, like, four players minimum for this variant, I suppose. You choose the one of the players that you like the least, or with the best hair, which is how we chose Matt.
Yeah.
And
or whose birthday it was.
How did that work out?
And then that player gets slightly different rules. So based on the number of... you've picked your boss, and then everybody else playing is a raider, and it's all of the raiders against this one player. Yeah. So that one player obviously has some advantages to help them out. So they get... in the version we played, they got 7 cards as standard in their hand.
Increased cards.
And started at 70 authority instead of 50.
The usual hand size is 5. I don't think we've mentioned that.
So normally you have 5 cards, but Matt got to have 7.
Yeah.
Which is quite a big advantage.
When you start the game, in the standard game, you start, the starting player has 3.
Yes.
3 cards
the,
rather
yeah, the first
five.
Person yeah, to play person. Has 3 cards.
That's right. And so when we played this Raid version, I started with 5 cards instead of 7, but then I had 7 from then on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then so you all play against this one boss, and you take turns as you normally would.
Now, we kind of evolved with that as well, didn't we? Because it was... Did Riley and
Justin...
Matt
had a go, Justin had a go.
Okay.
That was it.
Yeah, but we sort of picked up after Matt had played... To Justin, you played a different strategy where you just gunned away at one person, try to take them down instead of dividing yourself.
It was really interesting because Matt sort of
spread it out a bit.
Wanted to spread the love and try and
put it out.
But then I realised that I was probably that was not the way to go.
Yeah, so I played the next round as boss and just focused down Matt, and it was my job just to wipe him. And it worked, but then by the time I'd taken care of one player, the other two had ganged up and taken my life down significantly.
Yeah.
And it was funny because we were sitting here on the following Thursday going, yeah, you know, they're getting touched a bit iffy. It must be really hard for the boss to win. And someone went to pass and was like, man, we've never beat the boss, you know? So it made me feel like, damn, like, I must really suck at being a boss. I couldn't whip these guys at all.
I don't know. I think we need to play it a bit more before we can make a real judgment about it. But it didn't seem... I don't think it's particularly weighted in favour of the boss. Like, 70 life didn't seem like much when you can
Everyone
quite comfortably hit for sort of 10 a turn.
Yeah.
And there's 3 of you.
Combined total of 150 life sitting on the other side of the table from you.
So I don't know. So
now, there was one thing as well, wasn't there? As the boss takes down one of the three players, one of the three players gets to give his best card.
Yeah, that's right. When a raider dies, they can go through their deck and they can choose one card to go into each of the remaining raiders' discard piles. So they can give a card to one of the surviving raiders.
Yeah. Right, it's another nice mechanic. Like, real thematic. So yeah. I bequeath to thee. throw some ships out. Thanks, bro.
Yeah. But you've not died, you've just lost all respect. So, like, you just take my ships, I'm going home. I'm out of it.
Yeah. So do you say that, what would be the best strategy then, if you were the boss, is to try to take...
Focus down on one guy as fast as you can. Yeah.
And as far as building your own deck, what are you looking to try and do? Get loads of outposts out there. Drawing seven cards.
Yeah, well, the other thing with playing the boss is...
Trade Federation, more important.
Normally, if a player can't kill your outpost in one turn, the damage just falls off it at the end of the turn.
Yeah.
But in Raid, the damage stays on the outpost if you are the boss. So the raiders can cumulatively take down an outpost.
In that turn, before it's your turn again.
Yeah, before it's your turn and the damage falls off it.
Yeah.
They have so we had three goes to kill your outpost.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I think you want as much defense as you can get while you're trying to smash down one of the people.
So outposts and Trade Federation life just keep you in the game until
that sort of stuff. But obviously you can't do that too much because gaining life won't win you the game.
No.
So
it doesn't allow you to then take out your opponents, which is take out the raiders, which is the aim.
That's right.
Yeah. So you're almost racing, aren't you? You're definitely racing.
Yeah, but I think the game would get a lot easier for the boss after one of the raiders has been taken out.
Mm.
Because then they only get two goes to your one go instead of three to goes. So I think it gets a lot easier as the game goes on.
I think the initial burst of hand size.
Yeah.
Which means that you should have the ability to cycle extremely quickly.
Yeah.
So it's up to the boss making the right decision on the trade route and,
The ships that the boss buys are really important.
I found I could buy into really good ships from the get-go.
Because you're going to have more money, so you're hitting the bigger ships earlier.
Well, potentially you could draw all your money in your first turn. So you could have seven,
Yeah, you could have seven and buy one of the expensive ones.
Isn't the Dreadnought seven?
Yeah.
And that's the Star Federation ship.
Yep, that's right. Good.
I quite enjoyed it. Like, it's interesting to see hear other players' perspective on it and how the boss goes. Riley and I was talking about it afterwards, and it was like maybe the boss should get like 100 life, or if the raiders had a shared pool of authority instead of their each individual,
Yeah, it's difficult because the rules that you get a rule sheet with your cards. They're not very... There's some details that I would like on there that are not on there.
What does this mechanic exactly mean? And it's like, go with the man!
But not just that. Like, when they're saying you need two decks to play, they don't tell you what to do with the cards. They're just like, do we shuffle both of the card decks together and go from there? Or do we all still have the same life as the raiders? Or do we have a shared pool of life?
Yeah.
Mm. Things like that. Like, I don't know.
And I think the thing that we gleaned from it is that you only need two decks because you need the second set or the second pair of starting hands.
Yeah.
So just to make clear that you only have two sets of starting hands in that one box. So you've got a two-player game in the box, but to play the more modes, you just need more starters. But it felt weird because we had them in different sleeves, so you had this big pink block and this big blue block.
Yeah.
And we didn't even get past the first stack.
No, we didn't. Mm. But I think we could have in longer. I can see
better players,
how you would.
Better players may do.
Yeah, longer games.
Yeah.
All right. So another format was a double-headed Hydra, which sort of might speak for itself. How does that one work?
I like this one.
It was fun.
It was a team format.
This is a good one, because that was maybe the second game that Matt and I played, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So we ran through a single two-player game, just head-to-head, and then we jumped into this double-headed Hydra, which was good because we split up and played alongside Riley and Justin, who had played a lot more games, and then you really get the hang of the game. I mean, it doesn't take long to pick up. But
no, not at all.
Double-headed Hydra really gets you there super fast.
So just to clarify, double-headed Hydra is much like your two-headed Giant.
Yep.
And the Magic variant. Each player still has their own starting hand. Each player has their own deck. but you're teaming up. So
shared life, authority total.
Yep, shared authority total. And it was really cool because Matt and I were playing together and you sort of draw your five cards and you've got a combined cash pool and a combined combat pool.
Yeah, you can combine your money, which is really interesting because then you can buy a card into, you wouldn't have been able to afford until much later on.
So you just set each other up. So, like, I'd flash I got $5. Matt, what do you got? It's like, I got six. And it's like, awesome. So we got this much money. What do you want to do? It's like, we'll buy this fatty and I'll give it to you and I'll take the rest and form up this, each of you got these decks tuned to different things and you just sling it across the other side of the table. A lot of fun, and it really brought up the chatter. One thing that...
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. One thing that these multiplayer variants kind of fell off a bit, especially in the raid stuff, is that you're very focused on your own turns. So you're just like, all right, I'm just going to play this, 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 and this, and pass on. And you can't exactly chat to the guy next to you because he's making his turn.
And the lack of interaction while we're playing. So we're saying it's good that you don't have any sort of combat tricks or anything that you can do. But it also means that in these multiplayer formats, while everyone else is having their turn, you just kind of switch off because you don't need to be there.
Because you don't really need to pay attention to... Well, maybe if...
I did, because I was recording everyone's life. that's it.
Maybe if you're a better gamer, you can actually see what the boss is buying and maybe like get an idea of what he's trying to do so you can counter that. But for the filthy casual, it was more just a case of, just play it, move on. But with the two-headed Hydra, it was great because, you're talking to the other guy, you're slinging some crap across the table.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Like, you got suck, man, or poos, like my federation. It's like, I really enjoyed two-headed Hydra. Great four-player format.
Yeah, that was probably the one we had the most fun with, I think.
Yeah,
two-headed Hydra? Yeah, because, like you're saying, the chatter thing was good. What about the other one, the third one out of the four you could play was Free For All.
So
that's just you play
your
own deck.
That's what it says on the tin. Yeah, you just play a single-player game against everyone else. Yeah.
There was one in there that we didn't try, which was only fight the guy to your left, but we figured that it was very much the same as Free For All.
After the incredibly boring time we had playing Free For All, we figured we just
Free For All fell foul of that usual thing where you have to come up with some sort of moral argument for taking someone's life down. So, you're the most in, you're the guy
life.
In front.
You attack
most,
me first.
Yeah, all that kind of
don't
stuff.
Don't like your T-shirt.
Yeah.
And smell funny. Just
that always seems problematic, doesn't it, when that sort of thing happens.
Yeah.
Well, how did that end up? I think it came down to me and to David and myself. And then... your Viper squadrons were...
that's right, I jagged a victory, didn't I?
I was on one authority and...
Yeah, that's right.
The worst defensive card in the whole pack.
Yeah, David killed two people. It was fantastic.
I killed Riley. Was it
Justin?
Justin
and, Matt,
and then Matt. Yeah, that was just...
Had I had another turn, I would have taken you out. But, yes.
one more turn.
I didn't need that extra turn, man. I was one move ahead of you.
Had it with the Viper.
Yeah,
it was funny because all the way through the game, David was showing me his hands of scouts. And Vipers, but my deck sucks, and then he wins by killing everyone with Vipers.
That is not a strategy you should keep.
No, that's not.
They completely
I'm trying to think
jacked
of the other game equivalent. So, like in Counter Strike, getting knifed by someone is like the worst. Like, damn it. You suck that much that another player can come.
But this is like
you.
Getting knifed by someone who's run all the way across the map and you've seen them do it.
Exactly. Like, the whole time. I was on one hit point, I had the god hand, like always the next turn, I was playing I was playing Heavy Trade Federation.
And we agreed early on that you had the best hand, didn't we?
Yeah, that's right. We gained like 16 life a turn or something.
But then it
crazy.
Wasn't like we ganged up against you either.
Yeah, yeah, whatever, guys. You got so just
it wasn't though. Was it?
No, just fucking kill him. Kill him.
Didn't everybody just sort of together?
It was very,
just sort of.
It was very even. I think I still have the score sheet somewhere because it's on a bank letter somewhere.
No, I found that the ultimate game, the ultimate idea there was to take out to compensate for his continual gaining authority was to strip it away. So every time he gained, what were you gaining typically?
Like
eight, seven, eight.
Yeah.
I had to take it down
because otherwise it'll run away and you'll never be able to get it down in time.
So constantly I was having to target Justin just because of that.
But that's that moral argument, isn't it? It's like, well, Justin's making loads of life, so that we're completely fine taking it off of him, but that means that he'd probably be playing strong Trade Federation, which while we keep stripping you of life, we're building more aggressive hands that can kill people, so eventually we're going to catch on you, and we got kind of probably into the habit of stripping life off of you, but...
Well, you have to. You have to build more aggressive hands to deal with gaining more and more life and outposts and stuff. So
that particular deck, in my mind, was blue, yellow, green. So Trade Federation, Starguys, Blobs are just good at throwing down the
damage.
And the Trade Federation gave you enough money to buy the heavy
ships. What was it specifically we didn't enjoy about that format?
Because there's no interaction when it's not your turn. And it just takes so long for it to come around to be your turn, you get to do something again.
Same problem as what we had with the raid.
But it's the same thing in Dominion. Like, you're not doing anything while it's someone else's turn, and you can't do anything. So you just sat there. You may as well not be at the table at that point.
Dominion's got that interaction. There is cards, there is cancels and stuff in there. You say, well, no, you can't do that.
Well, no, that doesn't affect me. It doesn't stop them from doing it. Yeah. But, yeah.
Because it was pretty unanimous when we got around to, the other format that's left is the attack to the left. Yeah. And we're all kind of just like, well, let's not.
We were over it by then.
Yeah.
That doesn't take anything away from the one-on-one game. There's so much more.
Yeah, let's get into that. So what in general do we think? You want to talk a bit about the flow of the game, Justin, which we didn't talk about a little bit early on.
So, you buy the box, you take it out. It's extreme. So with Dominion, you've got like a 30 by 30 centimeter box. It's huge. You need to grab your cards that you've got to play with. There's none of that. You grab the Star Realms box, you tip it out on the table, you grab your 10 cards each, and you start playing.
Sleeve it up, because otherwise they get wrecked.
Yes. A bit of a side note there. This game is shuffle heavy, ladies and gentlemen. Once you go through your cards, you pick up your discard pile, you shuffle it, and you draw again. The start of the game, you're shuffling every second turn, make sure you sleeve them bad boys up if you're picking it up. More on that later.
Yeah, more on that later with this good games deal. That's coming. Yeah,
it's small form factor, very simple to set up, and you just start playing it. And
extremely portable.
Yeah.
Oh, very. Totally. Yeah.
And you're talking to the guy, you're looking at the trade row, and the cool thing is, even though you're trying to kill each other, you're talking about, that's a good one, man. Oh, that's sick, And you're talking about the trade row, maybe trying to poker face it a bit because you don't want him to notice that super sweet stuff. Early on, you just get excited about what the cards look like, what the abilities are.
Yeah. And the turns are quite quick in a one-on-one thing. You can get through it pretty quickly.
And as I said earlier, you're basically playing open hands. Yeah. So, you're just dropping the cards down. Well, this is what I got. What can I do with it? This is what I'm going to do with it. And I think what they've done, the creators, that is they've removed... They've given you that taste. Like, if you wanted to play this game, if you wanted to play Magic two-player, you've got to go buy two decks, and then if they're good, and there's always a better deck, and you're spending hundreds and hundreds of dollars on something awesome, this gives you the taste. This gives you the, I feel good about myself because I've made this deck that does this thing. You can still get some deck building in there. You can still get a bit of combo stuff cranking. It's $20.
And it's different every time, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's it. So you're playing a completely fresh game every time you shuffle the deck. I just banged the table.
It's the equivalent of a dual deck.
Yeah.
It is kind of, only there's more play in it because it's different every time. Whereas a dual deck, you'll just see the same cards over and over again.
Exactly.
But you can become... I was wondering where the strategy is on this, because with a dual deck for Magic, you become better at piloting that deck. Mm. Which is something, and that it gets your skill off playing Magic.
Yeah.
With this one, I think the thrill is you get different cards and different combinations, and it's quite fun.
I think
that
you get better. You get in this, so you get better at piloting the specific deck in Magic.
Yeah.
In this, you get better at picking what the strongest cards are.
Yeah.
And what the best combinations are. And it's a very dynamic process because there's different
drafting
cards
thing
every
you're saying.
Time.
You're card evaluating as you're going. Yeah, versus the cards that you have.
The extra depth through it is sometimes the right thing is not buying any cards and forcing your opponent to fill their deck with crap so you can get into the better cards further down.
Would you guys call this like a draft trainer maybe? Like maybe if you struggle to draft formats in any game, would this thing enable you to sort of learn how to pick cards better?
Yeah, because you have to evaluate it all, and it's always changing. So what the best card is always, it's a dynamic choice. It's never just, the red one is always the best card. Right?
Yeah, that's true, isn't it? Like sometimes, if you're on your first pack in Magic, you know which cards you're looking for. With this, it's, you might be at a certain point where you're thinking, right, I've got a lot of crap in my hand, or I've got a lot of stuff that's going to become... not useful to me. Yeah. I need to be looking for those red cards that are going to
get rid of this. Yeah,
thin my deck out.
The good stuff. Yeah.
But the thing I love about this, it's easy to set up. Once you've played one game, you can play 100 more. You never play the same deck twice. It's just it scratches an itch for a much more deeper game. Like this, I reckon this is like my first Magic. Yeah, you could. There's a lot of stuff to take away.
It's really easy to teach someone, unlike magic. Like it's very straightforward. Like you just buy cards and play them.
But where is that depth of strategy in this? That's what I worry about. It is the, you know, they're saying tournament play. How do you skill up on this? How do you be, you know, if we were sitting across the table playing against someone who's an absolute gun at this, what are they going to be doing that we've got no idea about?
They're going to be building their machine. They're going to get the machine going as quickly as possible, whether it's to get they get as much money as they can so they can get into the combat cards as quickly as possible. So they're going to be filling their hand with cards that cycle through your deck quicker, get rid of the chaff, just leave the good stuff behind. So I think if you were looking at a tournament deck, it'd be very streamlined, and they get rid of all those useless cards very quickly.
They just don't buy it.
It's about efficiency.
I think they would value the machine cult cards very highly early on.
Yeah.
Because the sooner you can get the crap out of your deck, the better.
Yeah.
And then they'll value the explorers because they give you money, and then you can just get rid of them from your deck.
Yep. Yeah.
I spent some time with Tax Australia in Melbourne, and they were playing Dominion tournaments.
Right.
And, yeah, I played Dominion casually and just, like, you know, had some beers, had some fun. But yeah, to see these guys, it's like they know what's up. Like they get their trade row out, or the equivalent, Dominion equivalent of, and they know what's up. Like this is the like you'll see some piles just not get touched because you know they're just not worth buying.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's what would happen. Like you'd see some cards in the trade row, and
then they would just never go,
just straight up no go.
Yeah, because it's all about picking which the best cards are and the most efficient cards, and some are just better than others.
Yeah.
So,
but they have balanced it in such a way that. Depending on what you've got in mind, every card's pretty good.
Oh, yeah, each can be the best card in the trade row. It just depends
on how you spend
it. On what you value.
So as reasonable beginners, we've all been playing it for less than a month or so now. Yeah. What are some take-home strategies that you've picked up so far?
For me, blue and X is pretty much a winner. Like, trade row, Trade Federation for me is just... It keeps you alive, it gets you the big bucks, and you just buy whatever. You know, if you just went really solid Trade Federation base, so you got a lot of money and you got a lot of life, and you just bought big ticket items, you just bought the 8-cost bases, you just bought the Dreadnought, all that sort of stuff, you eventually got to shuffle into the power hand, and it's going to drop like 20 authority in a turn or whatnot. That's it for me. Just
I think I love the Machine Cult. They're so good. You can like we not in our,
the red.
Yeah. Cards in our two-headed Hydra game, like we got one of these Machine Cult bases, and sort of by the turn six, by the sixth turn of the game, I only had about 8 cards in my deck because I'd scrapped all the crap out of it, and I was just drawing good cards all the time. That's it.
Yeah.
And I think making sure your deck is as efficient as possible is probably the most important thing about it. So, like as David said earlier, like if you come towards the end of the game and you're drawing Vipers and Scouts still, your deck is not as good as it could be.
Yeah, and I think that was one of the important things that you guys told me earlier on. So, I mean, it seems almost obvious to me now, but when you get those cards that say you can discard a card from your hand, when you're just starting, you're thinking, well, I don't know which ones to get rid of. But it really is that starting hand stuff, isn't it? Like Vipers initially, because they're going to do 1 point of damage to the person, which you can, you know, when you've got a life total of 50 and it fluctuates, you can go here or there with it.
And then
you kind of...
The trade's useful.
Yeah, for a little while, but sooner or later one is not enough.
Well, that's why I think you get rid of the Vipers first.
Vipers first and then Scouts.
And then you get rid of the Scouts. You kind of have to get rid of your
even the cheapest
hand.
Ships you can buy from the trade window add at least two money. Mm. Like $2
to
your...
Well, that's why the Explorers are good.
Yeah, the Explorers are great.
Spend up on the Explorers.
Yeah, Explorers are really good.
They can generate trade, and you can trash them for combat value. Well,
I think Explorers is the trick, isn't it? There's a trick to Explorers about being able to evaluate what's in the trade row, and whether just two money and the option of trashing it and getting two...
Yeah, I think if there's nothing in the trade window that you want, say it's your first turn, and you've got 5 money, and there's nothing in the trade window you want, well, there's nothing that's particularly good. Just buy 2 Explorers, you know.
And hope that your opponent's going to sift through the crap for
you. Yeah, because your opponent is definitely going to buy stuff from the trade window. You're going to draw 2 Explorers. There's normally something there. It's whether you want it or not is different.
Or it might be just hugely priced, and getting Explorers is going to give you 2 money to get up to those. I mean, if you draw 4 of that, if you have... if you have 7 or 8 money, you can pretty much get anything.
You can get anything you like.
Yeah.
And unlike Dominion, which is restricted to one card a turn, unless you have a card have cards that say otherwise, you can buy as much as you like on your turn.
Yeah.
So if you have 5 and there are 4 1 cost ships, you can have all of them if you like. Yeah.
Have you got a takeaway, Matt?
No, you guys have covered it. I was just talking about the getting the Explorers into your deck because they're a really good utility card. This reminds me a lot. You guys haven't played it, but Arctic Scavengers is one that I can see a lot of parallels between these two games, because they use up all your cards. They generate your ability to purchase other cards as well as get you into the good cards that you want. It's slightly different. I reckon we should really look at that one at one stage because it's actually coming around. It was created at the same time as Dominion, but it just didn't get the press. But yeah, the main thing is the utility card, the Explorer, is the most valuable card early on, I think.
Well, maybe
most useful.
Here's something, maybe the last point, just to muse over. You've got which one would you favour? You've got a choice to attack your opponent. They've got an outpost in a faction which they don't have a lot of alignment for in their hand, and then they've got a base which does have a trigger for a lot of cards in the person's hand. Do you take out the outpost with the idea that then you're going to try and get into them as soon as possible, or do you take out the base?
You have to take out the outpost.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's what the rules say.
Oh, you have to attack the outpost
before you can attack the base.
Oh, right, I didn't know that. Yeah. All right, well, there you go.
If they have two bases, I would take out the one that's more valuable to them and key to their deck.
So if neither one's an outpost, then you would take it. Yeah, you have to be mindful of which one's going to trigger the most
stuff. The bases are so useful. Like, they look pretty innocuous, and some of them are just like, oh, I'll add one money to my money pool, or I'll do one damage to you. But it's the stuff they can lead into, which is pretty... degenerate.
Well, the Machine Cult is the best example of that, with the most useful bases and outposts in the game. I played this on the iOS version a lot, and what I found is the tactic that repeatedly got used against me was they would purchase the bases, and then all of a sudden I'm faced with 5, 6, 7 bases and no way to penetrate them.
And they just build up all these layers that you can't get through.
And what happens is the amount of damage they're able to do from one card, which becomes many cards because they can cycle through with the scrapyard, for example, or with one of the other useful ones, then they're doing 24... I was getting hit for 20, 30 damage. Yeah. And then that was it. It was the difference. I was winning several games against the AI... And then all of a sudden,
they get to that point.
All the effects bounced off each other, and then bang, I was taken out in one go from a position where I thought I was in power.
Mm.
So
it can turn, can't it? Really quick.
Just with the decision making process, like which base would you pick? I guess this is where like the tournament level stuff comes in. You look at where they're at. You're going to send that base to the discard pile. How many more cards do they have in their deck? What are the chances of them drawing it very soon?
Yeah.
I guess this is what. Where it kicks up a notch when you start looking in deeper into what they've been buying, what they've got, so you're like, if you just saw them buy big money ships that are going to crush you, how many more turns have you got before that's a threat? Like, what's the opportunity? And that's where the math starts coming in. Well, you know, their deck's 20 cards strong.
That's the thing that struck me today was you sink all these resources into taking out that base, but then it goes into the discard pile. They could easily, you know, if they haven't got a large draw card pile, it could be the very next card they put out and bang, it's just their next turn.
So and I think that's where the decision making stuff comes in. Is this the turn that I can do it? He's got nothing. You know, his discard's loaded. He's about to draw it again, probably.
He's about to shuffle his discard pile into his library.
I'll buy my time to redraws, you know, stuff like that. And I think that's where this next level stuff can come in. Like, just start looking beyond what they've bought and start looking to what they've got left on the table and all those other things. What is life? Like, life total is a resource. That's, you know, something that's been a mainstay through most card games.
Best card in the game? Stealth Needle.
Stealth Needle.
Stealth Needle.
Federation Shuttle.
That's just because it's there.
Yes, because it's on the table.
For those playing at home, the Stealth Needle is a Machine Cult card, so one of the red ones, and the ability is that it can copy a ship, and it shares all things of that ship, so its abilities, its combat, and all that sort of jazz, but also shares its ally colour.
Yeah.
The big important thing for that, something that we've spoken about, is the ally triggers. You want to set them off as much as possible because this gives you extra damage, more effects, all that sort of stuff. So the Stealth Needle allows you to not only get the benefits of a cool ship that you've already got, but it will also proc the ally.
Twice.
All right, well, let's hop out of this and get come back with neats and twos. Important neats and twos. Because you can, we're going to let you know how you can pick up Star Realms from Good Game St. James, now at Cannington.
Still in Cannington,
and a
surely.
Deck box. Is it now?
It should still. Just be still in Cannington.
Good Game St. James, still in Cannington.
We're still in Cannington because we've been here for a while now.
Oh.
I don't know.
One day it'll just drop off.
Yeah. Anyway, Star Realms, deck box, sleeves, all for a special price if you just listen to Neats and Twos coming up next. Neats and Twos! Woohoo! Neats and Twos, here we are. This is the bit that you've fast-forwarded to so you can get your Star Realms for cheaper. Before we get to that, general Neats and Twos that have come in. Matt, you've been sorting out the apocalypse online.
It's a full-time job organising an apocalypse.
It is, especially when you've got the Medax joining in. Just trying to get through the details of it. What's Medax has been up to?
Well, he's been doing...
Ironing out the wrinkles in your apocalypse.
He hasn't voted yet, but he cleverly posed a question to me, which was, what do the weeks mean? Because in the folders, if you look at the photo, there are five folders there with the word week and then a number after them. Yeah. He cleverly asked, what does the week stand for? Well, I promised him an answer. And that answer is, it stands for World Extinction Event. Okay.
Man, I see. You've sold us all one there because we thought it was an actual
week. Now you can vote, Medax. You can vote.
Week 46 is the best week.
Yeah, World Extinction Event K 44.
I'm still hung up on the apocalypse organizer because that guy would have he'd be the most unmotivated individual ever. It's like he's putting all this work in for what? He's just going to end the world and then it's not going to mean much.
And he's not going to get, where does he get the credit?
Well, the other thing is to go with this is all of those things are different scenarios. So there are five different apocalypse themed scenarios there. Yeah. So the one that the players will be, that the cast will be subjected to, is the one that gets the most votes. So it's great. And
is there a leading week so far? Or everyone's sort of.
I'm not going to give it away that there's a lead because they're all random. I totally mixed them all up, so I've got no possible idea of knowing which is in which one.
Can we start calling it an apocalypse?
An apocalypse.
Apocalypse instead.
That's fantastic.
I think that's what we should be doing.
Put that in the show notes.
Apocalypse.
Apocalypse.
Yeah.
You can have that one.
Yeah, so have your vote. I'm only keeping this open until the 11th of April.
Okay.
Simply because...
And we're getting the team together.
We're getting the band back together.
News team.
Yeah. As long as we can get the Mark likes to do it.
Apocalypse team.
And this, of course, is just a massive celebration of having reached 200 likes.
Woo-hoo.
So, well done, everybody. Thanks for that.
Another 100, we get T-shirts.
If we get those...
we've already started talking about that.
The next one. Did you?
I did. Well, you were involved.
Oh, yeah, I was.
I still like my idea about the white denim T-shirt with the Seven Land logo on it.
Hey, David's not allowed to make contributions anymore.
No, I'm not Jean-Paul Gaultier.
I've gone to
You're not seeing my
wash.
Work.
Mm. If we get ice cream during the podcast, can we call it a podcalypsos?
I think you're going too far.
That would be the best.
Too deep.
So the game of the month special. It's Star Realms. When you walk in the Good Game St. James, now in Cannington, you'll see a display that will tell you what the game of the month is. And this month it is Star Realms. If you go up to the person at the counter and you say, what are we going to say? It's full of stars.
It's full of stars. Full
you
of
say, stars. It's full of stars.
Kind of like this podcast, full of stars.
That's it.
Look at me, man. Look at me. Look at these eyes.
Say it's full of stars. You get Star Realms, sleeves, and a deck box, all for a super special price, which is less than retail. We haven't been told what that is, but you have to buy the sleeves anyway because you need to shuffle the crap out of these cards all the time. You need a deck box to keep it. So it's going to be stuff you're going to buy anyway, but because you're listening to us, you get it a lot cheaper. So say, it's full of stars. Don't tell your friends about it either. Keep it quiet.
So
just use it for your own.
That's actually a rock solid deal because you get the game, which is sweet.
Yeah.
I guess we can all agree this game is sweet.
The game is sweet.
Now, once you sleeve it up, which is an essential, it won't fit in the box anymore.
Yeah, we found that out.
Kind of like those
The box that you bought it in. Yeah.
Sorry,
I'm trying. Okay.
But and then you get your Jackbox, your new one, new boot, and chuck them in there.
Yeah, and then you're going anywhere. You're taking Star Realms down to the bowling club.
Aaron took it with him to NZ, and he's just like, he's rolling around the countryside playing Star Realms.
Yeah.
It's funny you should mention that, man. In a fortnight, we're going to be back for our Magic Focus podcast, where we'll be chatting with a certain Aaron Graham, who's in New Zealand with Star Realms in his suitcase.
That's the whole reason he went. He's spreading the gospel of Star Realms.
And Mr. Rob Grimsey, who is also going to be on that pod. He's a mad Star Realms fan as well, isn't he?
He's just spreading the gospel of being awesome. Yeah.
So they're going to be back in a fortnight after this podcast comes out to talk all about the post-Dragons excitement hoopla. Dragons of Tarkir, that is.
Nice.
Yeah, cool. And probably some other person as well, since we've got four mics now.
You, Dev?
Oh, I'll be here. Yeah. I'm just controlling Aaron and Rob. Maybe Riley, if you want to pop down, you know, who knows?
Right.
Otherwise, all that other maniac Kian might drop by. Who knows? It's just whatever happens.
Yes, another exciting story from the world of Kian.
Actually, do you want to come along, Riley?
I just feel special. I mean, I realize that anyone's running these mics. I've seen this thing before.
Let's blob, and Matt's actually got an outro for us.
Oh,
I have.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, I just want to thank the usual crew. Justin, for keeping us honest, I think. Riley, for keeping us sane.
Keeping his sister honest over by the jukebox.
Yeah, we'll discuss that later.
What was happening earlier.
It wasn't honesty, was it? No.
Justin, you've got a big surprise coming your way. And David, for keeping us involved. You know, Dave and Good Games for keeping the lights on, and the Magic the Gathering Hall of Famers for being such clever dicks, and all our listeners, of course, and Facebook followers.
Oh, yeah.
We're doing this for you, but mostly for us. But for you.
Also for
but
you.
For us.
But
what do we get out of this?
What do we get out of this? Well, we get a concept for a new faction for Star Realms. I hope
fame and fortune. I mean,
yeah. The new faction is called the Sven Lahanders.
Sven Lahanders.
Way back, podcast one, for finding out about that one.
Where is this going?
What does this faction do?
Well, they hail from a cluster of five planets. five planets united under the common cause to spread the word of cooperative existence, cohabitation, and codependence. A spacefaring faction that calls forest worlds, swamp worlds, volcanic worlds, water worlds, no copyright infringement intended, and wheat-filled plain worlds. Their home. Our ships are capable of convincing others that peace is the way, or if not peace, then unbridled devastation and ruination. Join us in good faith and mutual assured safety, or submit beneath the steel-toed boot of our oppressive might. Sven Lahanders gain most of our power from converting our opponents to the voice of Seven Land Hand and using those ships against them, having an ever-expanding space presence and making everyone realize that we are the ultimate authority in the universe. And that's it.
Oh.
Buy Star Realms.
So, yeah, but please buy Star Realms.
Get out of here.
Don't forget, it's full of stars.